Time now for Fitzy and Mego with Nick Fitzy Stevens and Megan Ottolini on WEEI.
Like to watch? Just follow WEEI on Twitch.
It's just staying focused on what's important. And I think that's where we've been failing is, you know, getting distracted by everything else and being too individualized. And, you know, football is the ultimate team sport. So it's tough. And as a leader, I just have to tell the young guys from my experience, you know, how I've even gotten to this point was being a team guy, was just, you know, not thinking about myself all the time. And it's tough. It's not easy. So it's easy to say, but it's hard when you're out there running 30 routes and you don't get the ball sometimes. So there's a happy medium I have to understand where my teammates come from. So, but it's also just trying to build that relationship to where, like, we can understand the place I'm coming from when I tell them, and just everybody as a whole. So there's vets in other rooms, and we have to tell the young guys this is what we're trying to create, a team-oriented, you know, organization. And the more we can focus on that, the better we'll be. But I think we're just distracted in other areas.
Is that like a lack of maturity or a lack of guys just don't know how to be pros yet?
Yeah, you could say lack of maturity. It just takes time.
Kendrick Bourne doing yeoman's work this week.
Oh, God, Fitzy.
In the locker room, trying to actually coach this team up. Now we're leaning on our veteran wide receivers who've just recently come back from rehabbing knee injuries to try to explain why the team is struggling and to provide some guidance and a proper mature voice in the locker room. By the way, this is Fitzy and Mego. We are filling in for Ken and Curtis on a Saturday morning at WEEI. We are happy to have you. Hop on in anytime. 617-779-7937 is your number. When we came back and producer Joe Braverman chose Born to Run, I immediately knew it was Kendrick Bourne, Born to Run. But at the same time, in a lot of ways, that can also be the Alex Van Pelt soundtrack, because didn't he say in that, I like to call it his Patriots social media hostage video back in the spring, when he introduced himself and talked about how he likes to play football and call games, he said they want to be a running football team, and running basically is the identity of his offense, and he believes that's how you win football games. I wonder if the Patriots need to get back to reestablishing that identity, and if that would help it, or if they even have the horses to do so, Mego.
Yeah, I don't know that they can, because their run blocking has been atrocious over the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. Ramondre Stevenson had great stats at the beginning of the season, being mm-hmm. able to break contact and being able to get a lot of yards after that, but it just doesn't seem like that's a sustainable style. And I am very perplexed. Maybe it's just the protection of the rookie quarterback, but why they don't have design runs for Drake May. He loves that keeper play down in the red zone, mm-hmm. and I think that that would be a big confidence boost for him. I mm-hmm. would imagine that they're just being conservative in terms of protecting him. But you have no running game, and your last 2 weeks, your leading rusher outside of Drake May, be it Antonio Gibson or Ramondre Stevenson, has had under 20 yards for the total game. So that kind of shows you what position they're in. I don't know. I've talked to some of the offensive linemen about how they fix that run game. I think whatever they're trying to scheme up, they're being very quiet about, because mm-hmm. they don't want it out there. But I also just am not sure that they have a solution.
No, I mean, you can't go, yeah, Ramondre Stevenson, of his 120 rushing yards the first week at Cincinnati.
Which was never going to be like the week-to-week stat that you expect from him.
No, my God, he's not going to go for over 100.
But you also don't expect like 19, 17.
Right. Yeah, Drake May's your leading rusher 2 weeks in a row, and he doesn't even put up gaudy rushing stats, nor have they even called design runs for him as well, which I'm as baffled by as you are. But yeah, all those yards came after contact.
I got to think that's just a protection thing. Mm-hmm. And also maybe part of it is that they want him to build the habit of going through the progressions and not mm-hmm. just trying to use his legs, because mm-hmm. he clearly can. But at the same time, you're trying to win football games. Like, you got to move the ball. And if part of moving the ball is a design run, why not go for it? And why not maintain that threat at the beginning of the game, set the tone and say, you don't know if this kid's going to take off or if he's going to throw it.
Couldn't agree with you more. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. That's what Dan on the Cape used to talk some Pats with Fitzy and Mego. How are you, Dan?
Good morning, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just got maybe kind of a crazy idea. I'm 66 years old. I've followed the Patriots for many years. Everybody's talking about how they need a tackle now and how they need a wide receiver, a real good number one wide receiver. Why couldn't we take our picks and trade them for maybe somebody who's 2 or 3 years as a tackle into a contract? They're on a lousy team, pick up a tackle or a guard from a team right now and start to build our team for next year and maybe give a second or third round pick because we're going to have a much better pick than a lot of other teams. And I saw a show yesterday on TV, and I don't know if it happened overnight because I'm just tuning in this morning, but they were talking about the possibility of the Rams trading Cooper Kupp. I think we have much more to give anybody than any other team out there would with a high second or third round pick. I'll be quiet now and listen to you guys and tell me what you think.
I appreciate the call, Dan. Thanks very much, and take care of the Cape for me. Look, as far as everyone that was being an armchair draft evaluator or armchair GM this week, people clapping back where the Cooper Kupp thing came from, I have no idea. Now, there must have been some germ or grain of truth to it, because how a rumor like that pops up, I have no idea. Sean McVay has said several times this week he expects Cooper Kupp to finish out the season on the cash and salary cap strapped Rams, and that they're not looking to move him. And after the way that their offense looked the other night, mm-hmm. with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp coming back and at 3-4.
And the refs that they got on their payroll.
Oh my God. You have one job.
Oh, you're Sam standing right there.
He's literally the guy there. If you missed the play, folks, just go to Twitter or Instagram, whatever, and just type in Vikings referee or something like that, and you'll see the play where Darnold's head is almost turned around backwards like Reagan in The Exorcist and on a face mask where he is sacked for a safety that ends the game. We're deprived of a quality end of a game where the Vikings could have tried to go on a touchdown drive with a minute.
Meanwhile,
and a half
Antonio
left.
Gibson's like, I've been there, bro.
Yeah, and Antonio Gibson's like, yeah, been there, done that, bro. Like, but the worst thing is there's the umpire, the backline judge, is literally staring at the play and throws no flag, yet he almost made eye contact with Darnold, whose poor head was spun around. It was so bad. Anyway, Cooper Kupp is not getting traded to the Patriots, but for every armchair GM who said, oh yeah, that's what the Pats need, that's going to fix them, a washed 32-year-old receiver who hasn't been healthy in 3 years, did you see how good the guy can be? Do you have any idea how much a rookie quarterback, a developing quarterback, needs a dependable receiver, a professional who can get open and make plays? Talk about a confidence builder. I'd do anything to get Cooper Kupp on this football team. Look how good he was the other night. But that's not happening. Yes, the Patriots need to get a wide receiver one. Yes, they need a tackle, if not multiple tackles. Yes, they need to actually have a slam dunk of a draft. The North Star for me is the 2021 Detroit Lions draft, where in the first couple of rounds, they got Penei Sewell, Aleem McNeil, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Three absolute studs, Pro Bowl-level studs, who all just signed second contracts with the team. That's the kind of draft. You need to get a receiver. You need to get defensive line help. You need to get an all-pro tackle. That's the kind of draft the Patriots need now. I don't think any, Mego, correct me if I'm wrong, once you have a really good, when you find a tackle, when you find an offensive lineman at all, let alone somebody who's really good, you don't just trade him in season because you want to get a couple of picks or some pieces from a team like the Patriots. Like, those are such precious elements on a football team. Once you find one, you hold on to them. That's why a lot of them never even make it to market in the first place.
Exactly. And the other side of that, I think, is that they're becoming more difficult to develop quickly, where you look at somebody like the wide receivers, and they come out of college, and often they can make an immediate impact, whether it's, you know, Justin Jefferson or anybody like that. It comes out and you compare them, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, with a young quarterback, and boom, you almost get like instantaneous chemistry. But with these offensive linemen, because there's so much less contact in mm-hmm. training camp and in mini camp and OTAs, and the technique just is difficult to learn quickly, not to mention if you got somebody like, I don't want to pick on anybody, but Cole Strange, who has to put on a lot of body weight for the first, you know, 2 seasons just to get up to that NFL level. It's very difficult to draft a tackle who's not, we're talking like a top, I don't know, like a first round pick, and expect them to be out there and playing. What the Washington Commanders have been able to do with their guy that they have out there at left tackle, who's chosen right before, one pick before Caden Wallace, mm-hmm. and is starting protecting Jaden Daniels right now, is just really unusual. And so it's hard, because with the offensive line, they've been in this situation for a couple seasons now, and there's not a quick fix. Nobody parts with their tackles when they're, one, dependable and healthy enough to be out there, and two, of starting caliber, because they're so hard to find. And then unless you basically use, like a lottery pick, practically, mm-hmm. On a tackle, it's hard to find somebody who's going to make an immediate impact.
Couldn't agree with you more. And, Caden, the injuries on the offensive line, I'm sure you guys have probably heard this if you're listening to sports radio on a Saturday. You're probably the people that are, like us, in tune with all these little nuances and roster moves and injuries and such. But the Patriots are on their 12th offensive lineman. They're likely to have more. The record for a season is 14 offensive linemen used. The Patriots are on their 5th offensive tackle. They're on their 3rd center. It's bananas what has happened with this offensive line. They are not run blocking at an even professional rate like we got into in the previous hour. They're right now at Pro Football Focus had them last week as the 17th best pass protecting offensive line. I hate to say it, but like, I'll take that going forward. They're not the worst. They're not the best, considering that these guys haven't played together very long. It is what it is. Maybe Vidarian Lowe gets back tomorrow. He makes a big difference for them as well. I can't believe
which I said weeks ago, Fitzy. Can everyone get on the Vidarian Lowe support wagon? Like, just I'm not even saying bandwagon. Just support him a little bit, because he has been good when he's out there. Now he just needs mm-hmm. to stay healthy.
Yeah, that's if only he could stay on the field.
Whoever thought before the year we'd have a Vidarian Lowe hype train.
It's not a hype train. It's just a support wagon. Like, you don't even need to cheer. You just need to, like, nod. It's not even about,
is it
like,
one of those old wagons where it's, like, two people pumping back and forth?
Yeah, you just, all I need from you is, like, a nod and an acknowledgement that Vidarian Lowe has been good when he's out there.
Oh, my God. I was today years old when I heard it's not a hype train. It's a support wagon.
That's all it is. All I want is like a little bit of acknowledgement. Okay. Vidarian Lowe, he's fine out there.
If you want to hop on board the Vidarian Lowe support wagon, 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. Let's catch you up first, though, before we get back to your calls. What we can do for Drake May, and why the Boston sports media has, or at least Patriots coverage, has decided to turn on itself. Oh, but what a season. Let's catch you up on everything else trending in the wide world of sports with Joe Braverman. Happy to have you here on a crisp autumn Saturday morning on WEEI. It's Fitzy and Mego filling in for Ken and Curtis. Curtis with a well-deserved day off. Ken away on some family affairs. But we're happy to welcome you into our little Foxborough football family at 617-779-7937. Let's go to the South Shore. My guy Tim is down there, wants to talk some Pats. Tim, how are ya?
Backing up. Back it up, Tim. Maybe we get back to
Tim, that. Are you there?
Was that Tim or was that Gerard Mayo?
Oh, wow. Oh, I see what you did there, and I wholeheartedly approve of it. Well done, Mego.
Oh, poor Gerard. I do feel for him.
I know.
I don't want to be mean. It was just too, it was sitting right there.
We'll check back with Tim in just a second. Let's go to Tom on line two. Tom, good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
How are you today? Doing well, sir.
Good. Good. Just a quick comment. I'll hang up and listen. I think this all falls on the lazy offseason the Patriots had. They did no work in terms of finding a GM and a coach. The offensive line is a mess. The numbers look better than they really are, because every fourth quarter, it's a blowout. They play a vanilla defense. The regime's not working, and they better start doing their GM search now. We're going to waste another year of Drake May on a rookie contract. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah, one of the things, I don't think it was a lazy offseason, Mego. By any stretch, I can't imagine that ownership, they've not entered the John Henry sort of, going from a passion play to looking at the Patriots as an asset or just a piece of a portfolio by any stretch.
No.
I thoroughly believe they want to win football games.
I am a little confused about and I was as it was happening, about the offseason plan. Because I know that there was speculation out there about and reporting that they basically just had to get Bill Belichick out the door. And that they did that a season earlier than they had expected to. But you hear Robert Kraft saying that he had this plan to have Gerard Mayo as the heir apparent like 5 years ago or whatever it was. And so you go, okay, well, you had that planned so firmly, but really the biggest issue that everybody knows with the team over the last decade had been the drafting and the free agency moves, everything at the GM level. Was this the plan for GM? And I ask that because Ellie Wolf doesn't even have the title. He's the like director of player personnel, whatever. And he didn't have that title even during the draft. He didn't have the job during the draft. It was like he was in this purgatory of transitioning into being in control of the front office. And I think some of that had to do with they were waiting to see if Bill Belichick was going to get a head coaching job elsewhere and if he was going to poach guys out of the front office and take them with him. And so they were trying to figure out what the front office was going to look like. But it was all so disorganized. And as it was happening, I felt that it was strange that there wasn't more of an emphasis placed on what the front office was going to look like and how it was going to operate and what their identity was going to be. And ultimately, what we got from the front office was basically, we kind of want to do stuff a lot like the Packers have done it.
we are now the Cleveland Packers or the Green Bay Browns. Like, we're going to get a lot of guys that cut their teeth in Cleveland the last couple of years. You know, competent, competitive team. We're going to get the backup quarterback there who was pressed into being a starter for a while, who we're familiar with. To help stabilize the ship while everyone learns on the job. I almost wonder if, and I still say, Mago, tell me real quick, do you think the Patriots would have been better off if they signed Joe Flacco as opposed to Jacoby Brissett this offseason?
Yes, I do. Okay, I think that it's safe to say that the front office was disappointed, or I'd say like underwhelmed with Jacoby Brissett after the first couple weeks.
They weren't the only ones. Yeah.
The first 2 weeks of Jacoby Brissett looked like, okay, maybe they can ride this for a little while and the team will be in it week to week. And that obviously didn't hold.
No, it didn't. And Joe Flacco has played well above replacement level, both last year with the Browns. He was certainly familiar with the Stefanski / Van Pelt offense, and he's done that. The Colts looked better with him as opposed to Anthony Richardson this year as well, but they got to get that guy developing as well, which is why they just can't start him every week. It's all very messy. A lot of teams still trying to figure out what their plan and what their identity is. I wonder if you could have hired somebody, like if there was like a football auditing firm where you can just sort of hire them and they come in and they assess what your plan is and how you're going about doing it. I wonder if they could have hired someone.
A health inspector.
Yeah, a health inspector.
Or it'd be like a, like a Bain Capital who would come in and cut the fat and say, this guy, hey, what does this guy do over here? He doesn't really seem like he does anything except offer bad opinions. Get this guy out.
The Bobs, or if you will, just like
bring in an outside consulting firm.
Literally a consulting firm to come in and just say like, okay, we see what you're doing here, and we're just going to tell you right now the probability is that this organization is going to be a bit of a mess. You can't put in a first year GM, a first year defensive coordinator, a bit of a, I'm not going to call him a retread, but kind of a first-year offensive coordinator, first-year coach, and expect anything but massive growing pains.
This is what Harvard Business School should do. They should offer like a specialty MBA that is just about fixing NFL franchises. Or maybe you can do it for like baseball. Baseball would be so into this. They love the NBA guys already. But like Celtics, I really like the NBA teams. I really think it has more to do with football, though. If you could get Harvard Business School, Dartmouth, like these big MBA programs, they come out and they're like, okay, you're going into the specialty section of Deloitte and your specialty is just football. So you go out to Washington. You got a really big job. You're going down to the Panthers. You're going to Carolina and you got to go in there as a consultant and fix that mess. You can make a lot of money that way if you were successful.
I think we just stumbled onto a brilliant business idea.
Yeah.
The entire idea of opening.
Are
like
you volunteering yourself?
MBA?
Right
no,
now for
I couldn't. I couldn't do an MBA. And Washington doesn't need it now. But you go to Carolinas, go to Indiana, definitely have to send somebody over here, like McKinsey, Deloitte. All nobody knows what those people do anyway.
No, zero idea.
You're just on the road all the time, and you make a lot of money, so you're basically like everybody else in the NFL. You go in there and you trim the fat. You tell them who's working and who's not.
I kind of absolutely love this. Yeah, whenever somebody tells me, by the way, I have some cousins and family that, you know, what do you do? Oh, I'm a consultant. And you just sort of say like, oh, okay, oh, that's cool. You know, oh, I travel a lot.
You say that's cool. I've never said that to a consultant. Well,
I just maybe just to sort of move along. Like, I'd love to know what they do. I literally have no idea.
To end the conversation.
Just to,
you work in a cubicle.
Moving.
That's awesome.
No, they travel a lot. They do very well.
They go to other businesses. Like, what? Imagine having the identity of, I'm going to a company where there's people who are experts in their field. And I'm telling them what they're doing wrong. That's what a consultant does. You parachute somebody in from the outside and you say, I don't really know much about what you do, but I can tell you that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I was just looking this up. MIT has the every year the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. I feel like this is something where, you know, from there, like maybe MIT, Tufts, someplace like that could offer a class in sports evaluation or, you know, sports consultation, et cetera, something like that. Like Bill Simmons has always said on his podcast that he feels like there should be a governmental position called the sports czar or, you know, like the head of American sports.
Yeah.
And I've never disliked that idea. And I know a lot of people think it's just plain crazy. I liked it better when he was the Boston sports guy. Now he's a podcast and real estate king. But you know, this sort of would make a lot of sense. And the Patriots would be like a prime candidate.
Yeah.
Like, look, for 20 years, your identity was your head coach and your quarterback. And along with ownership, they formed one of the most successful triumvirates in American sports history. And since then, you've just been wading out into open water trying to find a new identity. And right now, they're identity free, they're personality free, they're victory free, they're, according to their coach, they're toughness free. The only way that they possibly figure out how to pull out of this is if, like we said before, if Drake May is him, and so far he looks like it, and then some.
He is. Yeah, but you need to support
him. He definitely is.
And I can't
do it by himself.
I want one of these consultants to get to New England. And they show up with their shiny shoes and their suit, and they're staying at, like, you know, some really nice hotel in Boston. I don't know, like the new Omni in the Seaport or something like that.
Raffles. Or fancy $150 sneakers.
Or like raffles. And they show up to New England, to Foxborough, and they walk in, and the first thing they say is, I need an org chart. What does Ben McAdoo do here?
I don't know.
Every
Nobody knows.
Week I'm going to ask this question. What is Ben McAdoo? What is his job? I want the consultants from Bain and from McKinsey and from Deloitte to march into Gillette and demand an org chart. And
so
say,
when they,
what is
so
Ben
when they
McAdoo's
go around
job?
And do their evaluation, you're just going to be right next to them with a clipboard, just being like, not this guy, not this guy, that guy.
Yeah, I think that this is a really good business opportunity. If you're going for an MBA, you're probably not listening to sports radio on a Saturday morning. But if you are, this could be a specialty for you. And that's just free ideas that I'm putting out there.
Yeah, we are planting the seed that from which will grow somebody else's business. And years later, they'll be like, hey, I just wanted to call into the show. I heard you guys that Saturday morning. I opened up my own firm and now I'm a billionaire. Like, oh, great. And it'll be Fitzy and Mego filling in for Ken and Curtis once again.
Absolutely.
Tim in Hanover is back. He finished backing up and jumped back on the horn. Hey, Tim, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Fitzy, you know me, I guess.
Yeah, I do.
Mego,
what's up, buddy?
You're so right about May running in the offensive line. May was a good runner in college, but he held the ball in his left hand. That's the only bad habit he still had that I see. He corrected all the others. And the thing is, he can run, but we don't want to get him hurt. The thing is, we got to spread this offense out like Air Coryell, not Shanahan. It's before Shanahan. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if we spread this offense out, it's going to give May more time. And if the pressure comes, he can drop it off to a back coming out of the backfield, and he'll have the time to be able to pluck him down the field. And if that's the case, we'll see what we got as far as receivers. It's going to open up the air game totally, because that run shouldn't be able to hit him, and he can run off of that also because the whole team spread out. That's what we have to do. Let's see what happens, but they're not going to be winning many games.
I like the idea.
Thanks,
but
Tim.
Fitzy, it comes back to what your personnel is able to do, and can you really, are there any real threats outside the numbers? Like there's just not really.
Kayshawn Booty wants you to know that he's a threat outside the numbers and he's tired of having to ask for the ball. I mean,
yeah.
I should say Kayshawn Booty,
hold
throw
on,
me the
Fitzy.
Damn ball.
Were those quotes taken out of context?
I
say with disdain and sarcasm.
Yes.
If nobody's picking up on that.
The wide receiver maturity issue, which we addressed previously and we played Kendrick Bourne's comments on, there are a lot of different areas on the team that where some maturation needs to take place. I got to say, for a wide receiver room where you have to wonder, save for Kendrick Bourne right now, who else would make another NFL roster? I'm sure somebody would want Pop Douglas and maybe Kayshawn Booty, but you know, in a wide receiver room that is bereft of elite level talent and top tier fantasy football style playmaking, there sure is an awful lot of noise. Like diva receivers, I understand. It's a difficult position. You get exposed to lots of contact. It's very physical. And you kind of almost want the same way that you want your lawyer, your surgeon, your tax preparer, a pilot to be very confident. I want a very confident diva-esque receiver, but they need to earn it. None of these receivers have earned the right to say, I want the ball more. I'm not happy with this. You got KJ Osborne basically saying this week, yeah, you know, I'd be open to a trade. What did he say, Mego? Did he call it like...
He said it was an alley-oop question.
An alley-oop question. Are you kidding?
Like,
get him
set
out
me
of,
up for it. I
you know, saved
sure
a man in a burning car once, supposedly a tremendous human. But if that's his attitude and he's going to be posting stories from a fake agent about the fact that he was going to be a healthy scratch, mostly because he's kind of stunk and been a no-show this year. And then he found out at 11 o'clock last Saturday he was playing. Get out of here. Jalen Polk, you know what? I hope the concussion is not a big issue for him. I hope he's healthy. I hope he gets well. I hope he can return to playing. But it is the right time for him to sit down and just think about the decisions he's making and why he's in his own head and why he's having such a difficult time doing something that he's been doing at a high level for a long time. And Kayshawn Booty, just when you could possibly be the North Star, you could be the Exhibit A of here's what happens when you make a mess of things. And if you grow up a little bit and you say less and do more, kids on this team can look to him and be like, oh, I'm going to do the Kayshawn Booty plan. I'm going to come in with a lot of hype and then I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to hush up and I'm going to learn to play the game and I'm going to get my targets. Now this week he comes out and says, I'm tired of having to ask for the ball. Like, guy, can we just have one happy receiver on this team? Can we just have one person not make a mess of things?
No, I think that's too much to ask for. And here's the other part is when the receivers are complaining either about wanting a trade or in Kayshawn Booty's case saying that he just feels like he shouldn't have to ask for the ball. Is that critical to you of Alex Van Pelt or of Drake May? Because it could go either direction. And I have a hard time thinking that they're being critical of Drake May. Because again, to a T, every guy that I've talked to in that locker room is so overwhelmingly positive about Drake. Mm-hmm. I think it has to go to AVP and saying, like, you know, the way that this offense is drawn up, they're not using me as a weapon in the right way.
Yeah, and Alex Van Pelt this week, I think it was Thursday, he basically said to all the wide receivers, he said, this is drama that needs to be kept inside their room. But basically, it was a very gentlemanly football way of saying
it's not very threatening.
No, it was kind of like it was piped down, but I wish he came at it more with a little STFU energy, just like, you know, grow up.
Guys, if you wouldn't mind all the stuff you've been saying, can we tone it down a little?
Oh god, the wide receivers coach is somebody who was coaching high school a couple years ago and like has never I think it's Tyler Hughes. I forget his name. Shime and I were looking it up the other night. Like Troy Brown was replaced. I'm not sure exactly what he does on the team now as well. Like it's just another somebody who doesn't have the pro level experience to be able to command that room. And now Kendrick Bourne has had to try to be the adult in the room. It's a mess. Too much to cover. And when we come back in just a few minutes, we're also going to discuss why the people that are actually covering the Patriots are giving each other the business as well. Like, how bad has it gotten so bad that the people that are telling you the stories about how bad it's gotten are now giving each other the business? Oh, my gosh. It is a wild world of sports and sports coverage here in New England. And your old pals Fitzy and Mego are happy to bring it to you. We'll be back in just a couple minutes here on WEEI.
They should be pounding him.
Yeah.
If this was New York, it would be way worse.
Yeah.
But there's too many here that just want to be covering the Patriots and put that on their resume.
Well, that's true. But
put it on there. To your point, that's how they're getting clicks.
Yeah.
They're on Twitter telling everybody, I cover the Patriots. See my avatar?
Yeah.
With me talking to Tom Brady? That's the identity for half of these people.
Friend of the Six Rings podcast, mentor to our own Andy Hart, and a consistent part of Patriots coverage from in-house at Patriots Football Weekly and Patriots.com, part of the Patriots Unfiltered radio program. Paul Perillo giving the biz to some of the local media.
Asking for more.
Saying we're not actually, some of us out there aren't being hard enough.
Be meaner.
On the Patriots. We should be meaner. Mego, when you look at the coverage of the Patriots on the regional level, and, you know, there are people that admire the passion, the intelligence, and the assessments of the Boston sports media. There are a lot of people within the walls or the confines of 495 that are not fans. It's the Patriots media cartel, the mediates of Boston sports coverage. Do you drives me nuts? Honestly,
well, we are idiots.
Yeah, we're all idiots. Look at what we chose. We should be consultants at this point. We should not be mediates. Do you think if this Patriots team were being covered by another media base, we'll say Philadelphia or New York, two other very passionate sports cities in the Northeast, two places where the coverage is intense and you know you got a lot of local diehards. Do you think the coverage is not rough enough on these Patriots? And if so, why?
I think that the coverage is mostly what it should be right now. I do think that this ownership group gets some benefit of the doubt because, and I'm talking more from a writing perspective than local broadcast, you know, like
sure.
Sports talk radio is sports talk radio. It's always going to be on the harsher end. It's always going to be more critical. That's what it's here for the most part. But from like a writing beat writer perspective, I do think that largely they give them the benefit of the doubt because of the success that the team had for 20 years. And you can look back on it and say, well, that really just had to do with Brady and Belichick and not give credit to ownership, to the Crafts and what they put in place to support or lack of support for those two entities. But at the same time, like, I think it's different than in New York or Philly, because other than if you were a Yankees beat writer, there's not really a comparable franchise that had the success that the Patriots have had. So if anything, like if they're being soft on anything, I think that there is a slight bit of that, but I can understand it. Like you can't just completely turn your nose up at the success that they had when it's the same ownership group. On the other hand, I do think that a lot of the columns and opinions that have come out after these games have been plenty harsh. Mm-hmm. So there's always this sense with media, whether it's sports or anything else, of somebody, especially on social media, holding something up and going, why doesn't the media report on this? And it's like, well they are every day.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that to it, but I don't think that that's like individual to this region's writers or reporters or media personalities. I think that's just kind of people hearing what they want to hear and maybe looking at it and having their own opinion.
Yeah, we have so much coverage as well. You've got Boston Sports Journal, Boston Herald, Boston Globe, Mass Live, two radio stations, umpteen blogs and social media aggregators and beyond. Like, it's not that we're, and not to mention the in-house media team for the New England Patriots as well, with guys that I know and like very much, like Perillo, like Evan Lazar, like my guy Mike Dussault, and so much more.
I mean, what Evan Lazar said this week.
Yeah, and then Evan Lazar, who found himself at the center of a controversy a ways back when he aired out some feelings and some spoke his mind about what he thought he saw in the locker room after the San Francisco game. And then that video got taken down and that kind of got scrubbed.
That was the mutiny comment.
That was the mutiny comments a while back. Now this week, in relation to, I like the piece that he put. See, this is interesting because I like the piece that Evan did. I was very happy to see that he put together a piece for Patriots.com with the headline, lead headline, a quote from Kayshon Booty this week. I refuse to go through the same blank. It was an expletive. Rhymes with Smit. That I did last year. Kayshon Booty talked about how he basically got benched and had to sit and watch, and he was miserable doing that last year. So he learned from what he went through last year, the mistakes he made early on. And Evan wrote, Patriots wide receiver Kayshon Booty is a great example of hard work working. From being benched as a rookie to emerging as a starter in year two, Booty leads all wide receivers in EPA per target this season. That's great. I just didn't love the fact that Booty said, and I think this came from Mark Daniels, who works over at Mass Live, you know, talking about complaining about having to, you know, ask for targets or whatever else like that. Just when we need to hear less. I mean, just I thought the timing was bad, even though I love what he's done. And so then do we have the audio, Joe, of Evan Lazar, what he had to say about this? OK, could you just roll that, please?
When you go into the locker room and you have a goal in mind of I'm going to talk to KJ Osborne or I'm going to talk to Kayshon Booty, and then you're asking certain pointed questions and the guys are answering the questions and then we're running with it, like, it doesn't do anybody a service, right? Like, it's not
that's the job.
It's just not
Perillo.
Okay, I don't know.
I love Perillo in that clip. He says,
he literally
that's the
says
job.
That's
that
their
is
job.
The job. And that's
do you think
that's the job?
Okay, so
thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. So, voice of reason, Paul Perillo.
He's
there.
So great there.
He's the best. So I just want to ask you. Now you're in the locker room. You have relationships with people from your days at the Herald, and the people that you've done such a great job speaking with in your On the Beat portion of the Six Rings podcast. And there's a new one that just came out yesterday, a lovely conversation you had with Nicole Yang from The Globe. We thank her for the time and the conversation as well. You know people at The Globe, The Herald, Mass Live and beyond. Do you get a feeling that any of them come into the locker room with a prefixed agenda? Like, I'm going to talk to this person. I'm going to get this soundbite and I'm going to run with it. And it's going to help me tell the story that I'm looking to tell. Like, I don't feel like the Callahans and the Daniels of the world do that at all, but maybe I'm just mistaken.
No. And I can't like blanket speak for everybody that goes into the locker room, but the idea is not go in there and get someone to say something that's going to get them in trouble. That's not the agenda. Like, of course you want things that are interesting. You don't just want boilerplate answers because it doesn't really describe how a player feels or what's going on with the team. But you're also not going in going like, wow, I'm going to write something that makes this guy look so bad, because then he's never going to talk to you again. And nobody right. in that locker room is going to trust you. So it's not like that's the goal on the other end of the spectrum either. At the same time, when you're having a conversation with somebody and it's on the record and mm-hmm. they say something that is like wanting a trade or they feel like they're not getting the ball enough, you don't walk away from that and say, well, I'm not going to report that. Like, of course you are. That's the, as Paul Perillo very succinctly said there, that's the job. And knowing a lot of these people personally, mm-hmm. and I've been in a situation where a former athlete has said something where you have to make a judgment call and go, I'm not sure that this guy knew he was on the record, or I'm not sure that this guy was even in like the best space to be saying this. You know, like, I think that the reporters, for the most part, who are down there are experienced enough to make a judgment call as to whether somebody is speaking knowing the full context of what they're saying and that they're on the record and that this is going to be out there. And that's been the case day after day down there in Foxborough. Like, it's not like it's, you know, there's any gray area with these conversations. You're in the locker room, you have a recorder out, and it's going to be reported. And these guys know that.
Yeah. You know, it's not like I don't feel at least like anyone is fearful of Jerry Jones like scolding or retribution, you know, when Jerry Jones, who's obviously very frustrated at the performance of his football team. And guess who you have to blame for that, Jerry? You, because you're the one, since he's like the de facto general manager and also speaks for the, he's the mouthpiece of the team, speaks for the team. I don't know how the Dallas media is coming down on him at this point. One guy on a weekly scheduled radio interview asked him a question about the roster building, and he basically threatens to pull everything, and he's right. going to like send these people to a North Korean labor camp.
It's crazy. It's
like that hasn't happened around here, but I don't know. You know, I'm hearing from some friends that the Patriots media is not hard enough on the team, that people are too kind, and that I can't imagine.
Well, the team's being hard on themselves, and I feel like and we're just reporting it. You
right.
know, like, okay, so the other day I was thinking about writing a column saying that I thought that the locker room, a lot of the players were acting pretty immature. And I thought, maybe that's kind of harsh. And then you have Kendrick Bourne saying, yeah, you could say it's immaturity.
There's
and
your I'm validation like, right
okay,
there.
Literally, guess, one of the players just
know,
said the same thing.
It's like, I guess they're just out here saying it on Front Street, so I'll write it. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think it's all to say, I don't think that, in my judgment, is that the reporters are not taking guys out of context. They're not twisting quotes around to make them look bad. I think that the locker room's in a bad way right now, which isn't a surprise because they're 1-6.
Yeah, this is what happens on teams that are trying to establish identity, that are looking to remake their culture. You end up with awkward storylines, and then you end up. My God, oh please save us, Drake May. Save
us. Do you want to after the break get to the argument that took over my household for the last 48 hours?
I absolutely would love to steer out of the Patriots malaise. We haven't even. The funny thing is, 2 hours into a show, I feel like this has been the entire week, Mego. We're just going where the narratives tell us to go. But we haven't talked a single bit about like how the Pats match up against the Jets. What about Aaron Rodgers? The dysfunction on that team. Can the Patriots win that game tomorrow?
Yeah, that stuff's almost irrelevant at this point.
It does. It really does. You got a pregame show
tomorrow.
Do you
know how much chaos you have to have Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines of these shows?
Seriously.
Seriously. Like, and Davante Adams talking about the fact that like they make a play and he looks over at the sideline and no one is cheering. Like, they're a mess as well. You know, is the Jets media being better or, you know, harsher? It's absurd. Let's definitely steer out of this and let's get into the conversation or the controversy and subsequent tweet that dominated your house. We'll talk a little. Let's make a comeback, if you will. Great segue, Fitzy. When we return for the third and final hour here of Fitzy and Mego on Boston Sports Original 93.7 FM WEEI.